Hi, and welcome to Parent Talk hashtag with Bev. If you've been listening long enough, you'll know I'm a Black British mother of West Indian descent with two young adults, and we're based in London, UK. Not an expert of any kind, just sharing my thoughts, opinions, experiences around parenting in the hope that it helps another parent or someone somewhere. So, the spiel is that, you know, subscribe, like, share, follow. I'm on most platforms, including Spotify, Google, Apple, Amazon, and so many more. But you know by now that the parent talk with the hashtag means we discuss and we reflect on anything relating to parenting. So today's podcast is about preparing again for university. But this time, it's my youngest daughter who's going off to university in less than 12 days. So to help listeners out, I've made this a two-part podcast. Part one focuses on choosing a degree and accommodation. But this podcast is part two, where I'll be covering finances, student finance application, bank accounts, and why... we'll get to that. There's also going to be terms used such as bursary, hardship fund, and there'll be 8 tips that I'll share around, you know, why our children should join student unions, work, doctors, and also why we as parents benefit from being present in our young people's lives, although not too much because they want us to stay far away. So as I've said, this is part two. I've already recorded part one, but what's prompted me to do this podcast or these podcasts is the fact that I've been asked to talk at an upcoming private event. And I wanted to leave something here for parents or young people who might need to absorb more information than the 20 minutes that I might speak, and I might forget some things. So obviously, I can't cover everything. So my advice is to make sure that you read your university's websites, and most of all, you know, for you to ask questions. The only stupid question is the one that you don't ask. So remember, this is all from my perspective and experience. So listen up, drink. I've got my sarsaparilla with me. Have something to drink, tea, coffee, whatever, or potter around the house as you listen. But you might need a little notepad or a scrap of paper to jot down some of the things that I might bring up. And if not, then this will just be a nice little chat anyway. And so here we go. So I'm just going to start with student finance. So my youngest had to apply, like they all do, via an online portal. And that's www.gov.uk/student-finance. I mean, even if you just Google that, it'll come up as a gov website, and then there'll be more questions for you. Well, because my daughter did this without really discussing it with me, she set it all up. I was then sent an email from them asking me to support her application. So then I had to log in, or if you haven't done that before, you're going to have to set up your own login with your password and so forth, and then log in, and then they're going to ask you to provide evidence of your earnings and submit them for the consideration. Now, this would have happened like, what, April, May, that kind of time, just for those of us who've not done it already or aren't aware of it. And I think what I had to submit was my last year's P60 and anything else, you know, my P60 for the tax year of my earnings and anything else that they wanted from me. They prompted me online and I submitted it online. And I would say do this as soon as possible because the process can take some weeks. I think it's about 6 weeks. So once my youngest heard back from them, it was to inform her of how much had been allocated to her. There are different there's different money levels of money that they offer if you're staying home or if you're not staying home. If you're in London or if you're outside of London, the money that they give you changes. So they need all that information. So once all of that had been processed and we heard back from them, they informed her of how much that she'd been allocated. So when this came through, we then went back to her accommodation list, which I'll cover in my other podcast, but we went back to it to rank. I think they ask you to have maybe 9 places or halls of residence that you would prefer. So we had to go back once we knew how much money she was actually getting. We had to know now go back and have a look at that list with the idea of how much money she had. And then we had to prioritize what accommodation she was having based upon the amount of money that she was getting. Now, they give you money that they're going to pay for your degree each year. That is paid directly to the university. You know, most universities now are like 9,000 for home students. I was really surprised when I saw that, you know, for overseas students, the year one is 29 grand for 1 year. I was like, woof, you need to have money to even get an education. And who would have thought that like 20, 30 years ago, that money would be the key thing as to whether or not you could get a level of education that would show and demonstrate to other people that you're clever. Anyway, that's a whole nother subject. But, you know, so once we, so I didn't have to worry about that. What we were looking at was what they were going to give her as what she was entitled to live on. All right. And out of what they give you, you have to pay your rent for wherever you are. Does that make sense? So we had to calculate how much the rent was for the places that she was looking at. And while she was looking at that, all I did was I grabbed the calculator and I was looking at how much money she would have left. And so how I did this was the tenancy for accommodation is, you know, 38 weeks or 40 weeks. And I just divided how much money from the rent by those weeks to let her know how much money she would have each week. So for her, you know, we had some places that were quite expensive and that would leave her less to live on. You know, and I was saying to her things like, you know, the cost of travel, you have to take that into consideration with the money you've got left and also food. She decided she didn't want to be in a place that provided food. She wanted to do food for herself. And knowing my child, that's going to be an expensive option. Anyway, I said to her, you know, she might want to join student societies and that would have to be deducted out of the money that was left, as well as food. And she was like, whatever, you know what I mean? I'll go into more detail that in part one. But eventually we had to compromise and look at what was feasible and how much money she had left. And she was calculating that, you know, she's got a job and she'll have more money. And I was like, babes, you're not even in the city that you're going to be living in for the next 3 years. So you don't have a job. So we can't calculate based on that. But as I say, we then moved on to opening a student bank account. And that only happened recently. Because everyone's offering your child a student bank account, but they have to look at, well, I have to look at as a parent, have you got 0% overdraft and how much is the overdraft that you can have before you have to start paying fees? You know, a lot of them are trying to entice our children by saying you can have a rail card or a taste card. I didn't know what a taste card was, so I looked it up. You know, Google is my friend. I looked it up and I was like, are these the shops that you eat from or purchase food from? No, then it's no point you getting a taste card. Doesn't make any difference. It's better to go for the rail card because the rail card will give you discount off of travel and you're going to be back and forth and traveling all over the place in if things work out the way you want them to. So I would say to any parent, help them to look at what they're getting for the student account, what the deal is, and is it worth their while? Because each thing is different to each child. Now, one of the things I wasn't aware of was on their UCAS track portal, the children are the only ones who have access to that. And on that track portal, it tells them the offers that they've made, the offers they've received, but also there is an ID number on there that is required by the banks to open a student account. So they're going to have to log on to their UCAS track portal, get that ID number, and then use that to open their student account. And I found it quite insightful because I never saw that site before. So from an early age, right, I've encouraged my children to open a bank account and a saving account. However, for university, I recommended three accounts or another account, yeah? And how you decide to divide them up is up to you. But where student finance goes into her account, which is her student account now, the rent will come out of that. And they don't give you the whole 9K or 8K or 7K in one go. They divide that over three terms. So in the first term, you'll get a certain amount. Second term, another amount. Last part of the year, you'll get another amount. So what I suggested that she does is for her student account, have that finance go in there and that the rent for her accommodation is taken from that account. That is the only direct debit or standing order that comes out of that account to pay for her accommodation. For the second account that she has, I suggested that she withdraw the excess money and put that into that account. That's the money that she's got to live off each week. So if it's £1,000 or £1,500, it's not left in the same account where the rent's going to come out. The biggest fear I have is that she's just going to spend money like water. Then come when rent's due, she don't have no money, number one. Then I'm going to have to be the one that's going to have to fork out however much it costs. And because I know I don't have that money, I have to help her to regulate how she's going to spend. We've already calculated now that she's got, what, £37 a week, roughly, that she's going to be able to spend. So if she has that in the spend account, okay, when that starts dwindling, she's going to start panicking. And I'm going to be like, girlfriend, I done tell you already, you only got £37. That's £37 is for you to buy food and for your entertainment, right? She's looking at me like, I don't know what I'm talking about, but I know. As long as her rent's covered, I'm not bothered. And then we have a saving account. Now you might say, what's the point of having a saving account? They are struggling on £37 a week and cost of living is going to rise and we can't do anything about it. And I hear you. Believe me, I hear you. But I'm trying to teach her that in a crisis, even if you've got £2 that you've been saving over X amount of weeks, that's money that you can have in an emergency. You know, mum, the bank of mum is going to be busy trying to keep the roof over our heads here in London. So just to get her into the idea of saving something. So, you know, if she's got £37 a week and if she saves a fiver each week, it all adds up because over 38 weeks, that's something like £190. And, you know, she can have some money towards Christmas or special events if she wants. She doesn't have to do that. The other thing that I did with my daughter was the account where it was spending that she had taken the excess money out and left her rent in. The account that had the excess money was the one that I had as well, so that I could donate money to that account at the end of each month. Now, I was able to do £100 a month for my eldest. But even if it's £80 a month, that's like £20 a week. And that adds up to like nearly a grand in a year. Or even if we only did £50 a month, it would help. You know, they're just helping them to think about their priorities and to calculate, to know what it's like not to have and have to think about, I need to budget. And that will mean that she has to think about the foods that she's going to eat. You might be saying, Bev, that's overkill, man. Three accounts? Why? Just make them have the one account. Well, all I can say is it worked for my eldest and my youngest, we will see. You know, what I did for my eldest, I will do for my youngest. And I will attempt to deposit a regular amount in her account at the end of every month. It means I have to sacrifice some stuff in order for her to be able to, you know, for me to be able to support her. But, you know, I'm not telling her how much it is. I'm going to sit down and work out what I've got according to my budget and how things are going with keeping the roof and paying the bills over my head. But I will be giving something to her as well. It's all I can afford, as I done said. And it's important for me to know that she has extra because I can't handle the begging, you know. At the end of the day, another thing that I did was I set up an Asda account. It really depends on what superstore you want. But I set up an Asda account, which I would do food parcel shopping for my eldest. And I did that maybe twice a year. I'm not talking about doing it every month because then they're not going to learn that they are responsible for, you know, their weekly budget. And I know this all sounds like overkill, right? But I'm just trying to tell you that they're going to have to learn and, you know, learn in a loving way. But we as parents, we got backup. So yes, you can set up an Asda. Like when they're talking to you and telling you, oh, I don't have any butter and I don't have any this and my water run out. And, you know, you can surprise them by having a parcel delivered. I know that my youngest, right, especially those kids who've come out of lockdown, Deliveroo is their friend, you know, when they could easily cook a quick little curry meal or whatever, they're busy ordering Deliveroo and just like running down the stairs so glad that it's here. I'm like, please, you could have whipped that up at no extra cost because all the ingredients is here at home. But as I say, ukia here must feel, right? And I expect to hear my youngest call me and say certain things. But I know already that as a parent, I've got a backup plan. It's not everything I got to tell her. I want her to discover for herself. And, you know, she believes that she can buy tuna and pasta for £30 a week. I say, God bless you. You go ahead, darling, if you think you could do that, because I know tuna is expensive. It's better you start to think about making. You can't make tuna. Don't get me wrong. You can't make tuna. But she's going to have to figure out other dishes. And she's going to be living with other people. So I'm sure they'll have ideas. The other thing that you should be aware of is that universities have such things called hardship funds, scholarships, and bursaries. So what's the difference between them? Well, the hardship and bursary funds are extra money from the university. And if you're experiencing financial hardship, like, for example, if you are a student with children, if you're a single parent student, if you're a mature student, and this is where we tick the right box, from a low income family, usually you don't have to pay back the hardship fund or the bursary. But please, please check your information out and signpost your young people to student union, because the student union have an overview of what the university offers to their students. I'm only giving you the terms such as, you know, bursary, hardship fund, you know, scholarship is where you're quite bright and you're able to get, you attract money because you're such a bright student, you get a scholarship, and the scholarship means you don't pay it back. That's money that's been given to you. But if I'm wrong, you should check it out and tell me I'm wrong. My children haven't got a scholarship for university, so I can't talk about that. But I know that should we get into any difficulty, that they will have a hardship fund and they will have bursaries. And my daughter needs to know that so that she can ask the right questions. The other thing is that as a reminder that students' discount is a real thing. So our kids have to get into the habit of asking at every place they go if they have student discount. And I mean, that's everywhere they go, because they're going to be at a university city. So it's there. But if you don't ask, you're right. You don't get. So just before I finish, and I hope that you were able to follow some of my waffle, right? I've got some like 8 other tips that I just want you to share, because we are nearing the end of this. So one is student union. Your child should join the student union, as there are various perks for them and they're part of a student community. So the student union, they will have paid work opportunities. They have career departments. They've got networks with local employers. They've got internship opportunities that can take place during the summer. So student union, they should join. The student union also has what they call a freshers fair. And this is a week long of activities where student societies, they all vie for the new students who have come in and they want them to join their societies. Now, some of them are free and some cost money to join for the year. So I would encourage my children or my child to join at least one. I did that with my eldest. There are so many societies at university, but for my eldest, I insisted that she join a dance society because she loves to dance. And also it's a stress reliever, right? You know, she would meet like-minded people who were studying different degrees from her own, but they all enjoy dancing. And that would be really good for her, so I thought. With my youngest, she's much more into roller skating. I don't know if where she's going, they're going to have a society like that. But, you know, I think that God is good and she will find others who may be interested and they can roller skate together. It's important that she has something that is not all about studying, that there is a level of stress relief that is productive or enjoyable. You know, my vision of university many years ago was that students only drank, they didn't really do anything else. That's changed, but I'm just saying there's going to be some people who are going to go buck wild because they've not been away from home and they're going to lose the balance. I would prefer to measure the balance in for them and say, look, it would be good for you to join student union and a society. But, you know, some people, right, what I know, some people, they seem to party for the whole degree life, their whole degree life, but they might be able to do that because they're excellent at exams and can cram for exams. Some stroll around and they just turn up and perform well. If you know that your child is not one of them, then you've got to help them to carve some balance where they can have work, rest and play. Number 2 of my 8 is study buddies. It's really important for our young people to connect with other students. And nowadays, most of them are on these bleeding TikTok and social media. They're not even talking to each other. But, you know, I encouraged my daughter to make friends with those who are in her subject, who've got higher grades than her, so that she can learn from them. They can learn from her. You know, and a good study group is a mixture of those who may be performing at first level, those who are performing in the middle tier, and those who are performing at the lower aspects of grades for their assignments, all right? Because sometimes you need a map of where you're going, And if you don't have a map, you don't know where you're going. And it's the same with when they're writing their assignments for degree. It might be a little bit different to when they were doing it for their A levels. They need to up their game a little bit. And so it's good to get a signpost of what a first paper looks like from one of your peers, and to show them yours as well. And, you know, you can be able to see how much further and what you need to do. And if you're too proud to do that, then, you know, the library will probably have examples of and guidelines of how you can make your assignment or your essay or whatever you're doing into a higher grade than where it might be now. And as a parent, my job is to encourage you to do that, you know, and it's not just a one-off conversation. I can tell you, I was telling my eldest that for 3 years. Eventually she listened, and I'm really glad that she did, because she'd done really well. Number three, weekly phone calls. Now, I would just say schedule in a time where you can just keep in touch. It doesn't have to be a long, full hour, 3 hour discussion. It can just be, you know, my mum's going to call me on a Wednesday. We normally call at this time. How are you? How's it going? You know, how are things? Do you need money? How's the cash going? You know, those kind of things. You know, who have you met? Who's interesting? Who's not interesting? Why are they not interesting? What are the lecturers like? Which part are you enjoying? Which bit you're not enjoying? You know, these are things that you can just, you know, keep in touch once a week, just to find out how they're getting on, you know, just to check out how they're settling in, who they've met, you know, just to encourage them, people. You know, that's all we can do, because they're living somewhere else and I'm here. Yeah. I also think this is a good time when you're checking in with them to speak about the importance for them to know what they're entitled to, such as pastoral care, student welfare, tutorial support, seminars, the relationship with other students and lecturers. You know, these are times when you can tap in and find out how they're getting on, you know, check how they're managing their time, social work and play. Have they formed any buddy groups, any peer learning, any network groups? This is all important for their survival. Why? Because the statistics have said that the highest time that students drop out is in the first year. And I am trying to do everything I can to support my child to get through that rough period. And if it means calling you once a week and checking in on these things, how you're doing, taking note of what you're saying to me, being present. And if that helps you to get through the first year, then my job's done, because you can do the rest. You know, keep them connected, especially true for those from a background that they may be the first to go to university, or like in my experience, you know, being the first and they're Black and there's less Black students in that course. So they need to learn to connect with other students. They need to feel a connection that makes them feel like they belong, because if they don't feel like they belong there, they will want to leave. I wrote something and I was like, when my eldest was going through the lockdown, these calls were even more important. When she was having difficulties with some of the material and attitudes from others, our talks were important. Encouraging her to seek support from the student welfare was many conversations. Encouraging her to join student activities and make alliances was also important. I was thinking, why commit 3 years to study alone when a burden shared might be a burden halved? So number four, finding work. I have limited knowledge because my eldest was given a monthly allowance from myself, as I told you before, £100 a month. She was in halls of residence and going through a pandemic. So finding part-time work was not top of her list, nor mine. And the truth is, you know, nobody was coming out, nobody was working. You know, if they were working, they were working from home. And she managed to get work with the student union. This is why I keep pointing you in the direction of the student union. She was able to get work, I think, in her second year with the student union, working with other students, doing stuff online and mentoring and stuff like that. And she got paid for it. So she was able to supplement her own income, which, tell you the truth, helped me out a lot. With my youngest, she took a year out. So she finished her A-levels last year and decided to what we call defer her degree. And in this year, she found her own part-time job. Yeah, I helped her with her CV. That's about it. She had to find the job, go for the interview, do the work, and get accepted. And she's managed to keep that job for almost a year. So, you know, because she has prior work experience, she's going to a city which is going to be a student city. It's going to be competitive. People are going to want lots of students to work. There are students who've been there 2 years who've got jobs. You're the new fish in the pond. So competition's going to be high. But they need to look for work, and student union can help, as well as the networks. This is why it's important to network, because then they talk to other students. Other students work somewhere. They'll put a word in for them. They'll get an interview. They get a job. They need to do that job, do that journey for themselves, and learn what it means to actually keep an employer and customers happy. Number five. They get their student ID, timetable, reading list, library access. I know that my youngest, all that has been done online. And so when she goes into to uni, she'll meet with student union, she'll meet with lecturers, and they will do a little bit more of that in person. So I would say that you need to do some more research, look at the student website, the university website, and see. And even just talk to your kids. You know, have you got your student ID yet? Do you know your timetable? What's the preferred reading list? Well, actually, I'll tell you a secret. I looked at her university and the department where she's going to work and clicked on the link, and it was like the first lot of reading, and I sent it to her. I don't know if she's read it, but I just sent it. And we've had conversations about the fear of the fact that you've been out of studying for, you've not studied for a year. And you must be a little bit frightened or apprehensive, because some people are just going to walk straight in from school. But I've said to her, you have done amazing this year. You've got through the pandemic. You've done exceptionally well in your A-levels. You're a bright, smart cookie. You've found work for yourself. You've picked up a new hobby of roller skating and made a plethora of new friends that you've been partying hard with over the last year. If you can do all of that, you're ready for this next stage. You're more ready than you realize for this next stage. Number six, doctors. Your child can no longer sign on to your local doctor's surgery because they no longer are seen as living in London, if that's where they're from, or if they're from Manchester or wherever. If they're going to a different town, a different university where they'll be residing most of the time, they will need to sign on with a local doctor. Now, the student union can help them, but I think you knowing that they need to do that before they get sick, okay? And as I said before, the rail cards, they get a third off their travel. So every little helps. They need a rail card, a digital rail card. And finally, as we finish up, food parcels. As I said, you know, Asda can do all of that for you, or Tesco's, or whoever can deliver those things to your child while they're away, if that's what you want. But also food parcels. So like what we did, we had a box. And we would put things in that box. So if I went shopping and I'd remember something that my daughter liked, I'd buy it, put it in that box. And so there were two things. She'd either call and say, "Mom, the biscuits are too expensive here. Can you send me some?" And then I would pack a whole box of biscuits or whatever, treats that she couldn't afford, and then send them to her. But when she came home for odd weekends, that food parcel would be there without even thinking about it. And it would just be, "Oh, that's yours. You want to take it with you?" And she'd be like, "Oh, you're thinking about me even when I'm not here." And I'd be like, "Yes, we are." And that was nice for her to know that even though she wasn't at home, she was still at home. You get me? The other thing that we did, like Christmas presents, we got luxury items, or we chose necessity, things that she needed that she couldn't afford. And Christmas was the time for us to be able to do that. So that's it. Finally, I think the biggest lesson for us parents is allowing them to become their own adults. And to be truthful, that is really another podcast all on its own. One thing we all agree on in our family, in my family, has been that our home is a space where we make mistakes. But we are here to support and learn with each other. You know, it's better you make a mistake and we share it so we can discuss it and learn from it, as well as take steps to deal with it and prepare ahead. Regardless of what the outside world throws at you, I think that while your mum is still alive to share her life experiences that might help you, why wouldn't I? If we don't know something, then let's find out, so that we can improve stuff for ourselves as a group. The result of this, I think, has been, the result of that thinking has been that my children have come to me with whatever. Sometimes I don't want to hear it, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's still a space for them to make mistakes and learn. So am I expecting my youngest to make some financial mistakes this year? Yeah, I am. Do I have a backup plan? Yes, I do. Do I have some speeches prepared? Maybe. But most of all, I want her to know that this isn't as big as, it isn't as humongous a mistake that we can't get over it and get over it together. We might have to pull our straps, you know, we might have to pull our corset in, you know, we might have to, you know, do our shoelaces a little bit tighter, but you know, you're away and we're still together. So anyway, that's it. I think I've done well, really. Not hours and hours. So remember, if this has been useful for you, share it with some other parent and others who might find some of what I've said useful. And if you have questions that you might like to pose, if I've forgotten to deal with anything here and you've got a question and you're thinking, "Boy, Bev, what are you thinking about that?" then you can email me at parenttalkwithbev, that's all one word, parenttalkwithbev@gmail.com. So thank you for listening. I'm wishing you and your loved ones some daily blessings. Listen to podcast one about a degree and accommodation, if that's the right one for you, or share it with others whose children are preparing for university next year. So, as I say, I am out and wishing you and your loved ones daily blessings. Remain safe. Until next time, I am out.